We're continuing chapter 16 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Harry had been looking forward to the weekend trip to Hogsmeade, but there was still one thing worrying him. Sirius had maintained a stony silence since he had appeared in the fire at the beginning of September. Harry knew that they had made him angry by saying that they didn't want him to come. But he still worried from time to time that Sirius might throw caution to the wind and turn up anyway. What were they going to do if a great black dog came bounding up the street toward them in Hogsmeade, perhaps under the nose of Draco Malfoy? "Well, you can't blame him for wanting to get out and about," said Ron, when Harry discussed his fears with him and Hermione. "I mean, he's been on the run for 2 years, hasn't he? And I know, that can't have been a laugh, but at least he was free, hasn't he? Now he's just shut up all the time with that lunatic elf?" Hermione scowled at Ron, but otherwise ignored the slight on creature. "The trouble is," she said to Harry, "until Voldemort—oh, for heaven's sake, Ron, comes out into the open. Sirius is going to have to stay hidden, isn't he? I mean, the stupid ministry isn't going to realize Sirius is innocent until they accept that Dumbledore has been telling the truth about him all along. And once the fools start catching the real Death Eaters again, it'll be obvious Sirius isn't one. I mean, he hasn't gotten the mark, for one thing." "I don't reckon he'll be stupid enough to turn up," said Ron, bracingly. "Dumbledore would go mad if he did, and Sirius listens to Dumbledore, even if he doesn't like what he hears." When Harry continued to look worried, Hermione said, "Listen, Ron and I have been sounding out people who we thought might want to learn some proper defense against the Dark Arts. And there are a couple who seem interested. We've told them to meet us in Hogsmeade." "Right," said Harry vaguely, his mind still unserious. "Don't worry, Harry," said Hermione quietly. "You've got enough on your plate without Sirius, too." She was quite right, of course. He was barely keeping up with his schoolwork, even though he was doing much better, now that he no longer was spending every evening in detention with Umbridge. Ron was either further behind with his work than Harry, because while they both had Quidditch practices twice a week, Ron also had prefect duties. However, Hermione, who was taking more subjects than either of them, had not only finished all her homework, but also was finding more time to knit elf clothes. Harry had to admit that she was getting a bit better. It was now almost possible to distinguish between the hats and the socks. Mm. The morning of the Hogsmeade visit dawned brightly but windy. After breakfast, they queued up in front of Filch, who matched their names to a long list of students who had permission from their parents or guardian to visit the village. With a slight pang, Harry remembered that if it hadn't been for Sirius, he would not have been going at all. When Harry reached Filch, the caretaker gave a great sniff, as though trying to detect a whiff of something from Harry. Then he gave a curt nod and set his jowls a-quiver, and Harry walked on, out the stone steps, in the cold, sunlit day. "Why was Filch sniffing you?" said Ron, as he, Harry, and Hermione set off at a brisk pace down the wide drive to the gates. "I suppose he was checking for the smell of dung bombs," Harry said with a laugh. "I forgot to tell you." And he recounted the story of sending the letter to Sirius and Filch bursting in seconds later, demanding to see the letter. To his slight surprise, Hermione found the story highly interesting, much more, indeed, than he did himself. "He said he was tipped off you were ordering dung bombs, but who had tipped him off?" "I don't know," said Harry. "Maybe Malfoy. He'd think it was a laugh." They walked between the stone pillars topped with winged boars and turned left along the road to the village, the wind whipping in their hair into their ears.
"Into their eyes."
"Malfoy," said Hermione very skeptically. "Well, yes, maybe." And she remained deep in thought all the way to the outskirts of Hogsmeade. "Where are we going, anyway?" asked Harry. "The Three Broomsticks?" "Oh, no," said Hermione, coming out of her reverie. "No, it's always packed and really noisy. I've told the others to meet us in the Hogshead, the other pub, you know, the one. It's not on the main road. I think it's a bit, you know, dodgy. But students don't normally go in there, so I don't think we would be overheard."
It's on the dodgy end.
They walked down the main street past Zonko's joke shop, where they were unsurprised to see Fred Jordan, George, and Lee Jordan pass the office, post office. Why does she always say Fred, George, and Lee Jordan? Why not Fred, George, and Lee? We've heard enough about Lee. He's like a regular with Fred and George. He doesn't need a last name now. Past the post office, from which owls issued at regular commands, regular intervals, and turned up a side street from the top of which stood a small inn. A battered wooden sign hung from a rusty bracket over the door, with a picture upon it of a wild boar's severed head leaking blood onto the white cloth around it. Ugh. The sign creaked in the wind as they approached. All three of them hesitated outside the door. Oh, sorry. Well, come on, said Hermione, slightly nervously. Harry led the way inside. It was not at all like the Three Broomsticks, whose large bar gave an impression of gleaming warmth and cleanliness. The Hogshead Bar comprised one small, dingy, and very dirty room that smelled something that might have been goats. The bay window was so encrusted with grime that very little daylight could penetrate the room, which was lit instead with the stubs of candles sitting on the rough wooden tables. The floor seemed to be, at first glance, earthy, though as Harry stepped on it, he realized that there was a stone beneath what seemed to be an accumulated filth of centuries. Harry remembered Hagrid mentioning the pub in its first year. He had a lot of funny folk in Hogshead, he had said, explaining how he had won the dragon's egg from a hood stranger there. At the time, Harry wondered why Hagrid had not found it odd that the strangers kept his face hidden throughout their encounter. He said now that keeping your face hidden was something of a fashion in the Hogshead. There was a man at the bar whose whole head was wrapped in dirty gray bandages, though he still managed to gulp endless glasses of something smoking. Some smoking fiery substance through a slit over his mouth. Two figures shrouded in hoods sat at a table in one of the windows. Harry might have thought them dementors if they had not been talking in strong Yorkshire accents. In a shadowy corner beside the fireplace sat a witch with a thick black veil that fell to her toes. They could just see the rip of her nose because it caused the veil to protrude slightly. I don't know about this, Hermione, Harry mustered as they crossed to the bar. He was looking particularly at the heavily veiled witch. Has it occurred to you that Umbridge might be under that? Hermione cast an appraising eye at the veiled figure. Umbridge is shorter than that woman, she said quietly. And anyway, even if Umbridge does come in here, there's nothing she can do to stop us, Harry, because I've double and triple-checked the school rules. We're not out of bounds. I specifically asked Professor Flitwick whether students were allowed to come in the Hogshead, and he said yes. But he advised me strongly to bring our own glasses. I've looked up everything I can think of about study groups and homework groups, and they're definitely allowed. I just don't think it's a good idea if we parade what we're doing. No, said Harry dryly, especially if it's not a homework group you're planning. The barman sidled toward them out of a back room. He was a grumpy-looking old man with a great deal of gray long hair and beard. He was tall and thin and looked vaguely familiar to Harry. What? He grunted. Three butterbeers, please, said Hermione. The man reached behind the counter and pulled up three very dusty, very dirty glasses, which he slammed on the bar. Six sickles, he said. I'll get them, said Harry quickly, passing over the silver. The barman's eyes traveled over Harry, resting for a fraction of a second on his scar. Then he turned away and deposited Harry's money in an ancient wooden till, whose drawer slid open automatically to receive it. Harry, Ron, and Hermione retreated to the farthest table from the bar and sat down, looking around. Well, the man in the dirty gray bandages wrapped the counter with his knuckles and received another smoking drink from the barman. You know what? Ron murmured, looking over at the bar with enthusiasm. We could order anything we liked in here. I bet the bloke would sell us anything. He wouldn't care. I've always wanted to try fire whiskey. You are a prefect, snarled Hermione. Oh, said Ron, the smile fading from his face. Yeah. So who did you say was supposed to be meeting us, Harry asked, retching over the rusty top of his butterbeer and taking a swig. Just a couple of people, Hermione repeated, checking her watch, and then looking anxiously toward the door. I told them to be here about now, and I'm sure they all know where it is. Oh, look, this might be them now. The door of the pub opened. A thick band of dusty sunlight split the room in two for a moment, then vanished, blocked by the oncoming rush of a crowd of people. First came Neville and Dean and Lavender, who was followed closely by Parvati and Padma Patil. And Harry's stomach did a backflip at Cho and one of her usually giggling girlfriends. And then, on her own and looking so dreamy she might have been walking in by accident, was Luna Lovegood. Then Katie Bell, Alicia Spinnett, Angelina Johnson, Colin and Dennis Creevy, Ernie McMillan, Justin Filch, Fletchley, Hannah Abbott, and a Hufflepuff girl with a long plait down her back, whose name Harry did not know. Three Ravenclaw boys he was pretty sure were called Anthony Goldstein, Michael Corner, and Terry Boot. Wonder if Anthony Goldstein is Jewish. Ginny, followed by a tall, skinny blonde boy with an upturned nose who Harry recognized vaguely as being a member of the Hufflepuff Quidditch team. And bringing up the rear, Fred and George Weasley and their friend Lee Jordan, all three of whom were carrying large paper bags crammed with Zonko's merchandise. "A couple of people," said Harry hoarsely to Hermione. "A couple of people." "Well, the idea seemed quite popular," said Hermione happily. "Ron, do you want to pull up some more chairs?" The barman had frozen in the act of wiping out a glass with a rag, so filthy it looked like it had never been washed. Possibly he had never seen his pub so full. "Hi," said Fred, reaching the bar first and counting his companions quickly. "Could we have 25 butterbeers, please?" By the way, I want to count. That seems a little high. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. 24. He's off by one. They're going to have an extra butterbeer. The barman glanced at him for a moment, and then, throwing down his rag irritably, as though he'd been interrupted in something very important, he started passing up dusty butterbeers from under the bar. "Cheers," said Fred, handing them out. "Cough up, everyone. I haven't got enough gold for all this." Harry watched numbly as the large chattering group took their beers from Fred and rummaged in their robes to find coins. He could not imagine what these people had turned up for until that horrible thought occurred to him that they might be expecting some kind of speech, at which he rounded on Hermione. "What have you been telling people?" he said in a low voice. "What are they expecting?" "I've told you, they just want to hear what you've got to say," said Hermione soothingly. But Harry continued to look at her furiously, so that she added quickly, "You don't have to do anything yet. I'll speak to them first." "Hey, Harry," said Neville, beaming and taking a seat opposite Harry. Harry tried to smile back, but he didn't speak. His mouth was exceptionally dry. Cho just smiled at him and sat down on Ron's right. Her friend, who had curly reddish-blonde hair, did not smile, but gave Harry a thoroughly mistrustful look that told Harry plainly that, given her way, she would not be here at all. In twos and threes, the new arrivals settled around Harry, Ron, and Hermione, some looking rather excited, others curious. Luna Lovegood gazed dreamily into space. When everyone had pulled up a chair, the chatter died out. Every eye was upon Harry. Said Hermione, her voice slightly higher than usual, out of nerves. "Well, hi." The group focused its attention on her instead, though eyes continued to dart back regularly to Harry. "Well, you know why you're here. Well, Harry had Harry threw her a sharp look. "I had the idea that it might be good if people wanted to study Defense Against the Dark Arts, and I mean really study it. You know, not the rubbish that Umbridge is doing with us." Hermione's voice had suddenly become much stronger and more confident. "Because nobody can call that Defense Against the Dark Arts." "Hear, hear," said Anthony Goldstein, and Hermione looked heartened. "Well, I thought it would be good if we, well, took matters into our own hands." She paused, looking sideways at Harry, and went on. "And by that I mean learning how to defend ourselves properly. Not just theory, but real spells. You want to pass your Defense Against the Dark Arts all, too, I bet," said Michael Corner. "Of course I do," said Hermione at once. "But I want more than that. I want to be properly trained in defense because..." She took a deep breath and finished. "Because Lord Voldemort's back." The reaction was immediate and predictable. Cho's friend shrieked and slapped butterbeer down herself. Oh, she's a hoot. Terry Boot, gave a kind of involuntary twitch. Padma Patil shuddered, and Neville gave an odd yelp. Then he managed to turn into a cough. All of them, however, looked fixed eagerly at Harry. "Well, that's the plan, anyway," said Hermione. "If you want to join us, we need to decide how we're going to..." "Where's the proof you know who's back?" said the blonde Hufflepuff player in a rather aggressive voice. "Well, Dumbledore believes it," Hermione began. "You mean Dumbledore believes him," said the blonde boy, nodding at Harry. "Who are you?" said Ron rather rudely. "Zacharias Smith," said the boy. "I think we've got the right to know exactly what makes him say you know who's back." "Look," said Hermione, intervening swiftly, "that's really not what this meeting's supposed to be about." "It's okay, Hermione," said Harry. It had just dawned on him why so many people were there. He felt that Harry should have seen this coming. Some of these people, perhaps even most of them, had turned up in the hopes of hearing Harry's story firsthand. "What makes me say you know who's back?" he asked, looking Zacharias straight in the face. "I saw him. But Dumbledore told the whole school that happened last year, and you didn't believe him. You don't believe me, and I'm not wasting an afternoon trying to convince everyone." The whole group seemed to have held its breath while Harry spoke. Harry had the impression that even the barman was listening in. He was wiping the same glass with a filthy rag. It was becoming steadily dirtier. Zacharias said dismissively, "All Dumbledore told us last year was that Cedric Diggory got killed by Unihu, and that you brought Diggory's back to Hogwarts. He didn't give us details. He didn't tell us exactly how Diggory got murdered. I think we'd all like to know." "If you've come to hear exactly what it looks like when Voldemort murders someone, I can't help you," Harry said. His temper, always so close to the surface these days, was rising again. He did not take his eyes from Zacharias Smith's aggressive face, determined not to look at Cho. "I don't want to talk to about Cedric Diggory, all right? So if that's what you're here for, you might as well clear out." He cast an angry look in Hermione's direction. This was, he felt, all her fault. She had decided to display him like some sort of freak. And of course, they had all turned up to see just how wild his story was. But none of them left their seats, not even Zacharias Smith, though he continued to gaze intensely at Harry. "So," said Hermione, her voice very high-pitched again. "So like I was saying, if you want to learn some defense, then we need to work out what we're going to do, and how often we're going to meet, and where we're going to." "Is it true," interrupted the girl with a long plate down her back, looking at Harry, "that you can produce a Patronus?" There was a murmur of interest around the group at this. "Yeah," said Harry defensively. "A corporeal Patronus?" The phrase stirred something in Harry's memory. "You don't know Madame Bones, do you?" she asked. He asked. The girl smiled. "She's my auntie," she said. "I'm Susan Bones. She told me about your hearing. So is it really true? You make a stag Patronus?" "Yes," said Harry. "Blimey, Harry," looking deeply impressed. Said Lee, looking deeply impressed. "I never knew that." "Mum told Ron not to spread it around," said Fred, grinning at Harry. "She thought you got enough attention as it was." "She's not wrong," mumbled Harry, and a couple of people laughed. The veiled witch, sitting alone, shifted slowly in her seat. "Did you kill a basilisk with that sword of Dumbledore's office?" demanded Terry Boot. "That's what one of the portraits on the wall told me when I was in there last year." Yeah, I did, said Harry. Justin Fletchley whistled, and the Creevy brothers exchanged awestruck looks. Lavender Brown said, "Wow," softly. Harry was feeling slightly hot around the collar now. He was determined to look anywhere but at Cho. "And in our first year," said Neville, to the group at large, "he saved that Sorcerer's Stone. "Sorcerers," hissed Hermione. "Yeah, that, from you know who," finished Neville. Anna Abbott's eyes were as round as galleons. "That's not to mention," said Cho. Harry's eyes snapped onto her. She was looking at him, smiling. His stomach did another somersault. All the tasks he had to get through at the Triwizard Tournament last year, getting past dragons and merpeople and acromantulas and things. There was a murmur of impressed agreement around the table. Harry's insides were squirming. He was trying to arrange his face so that he did not look too pleased with himself. The fact that Cho had just praised him made it that much, much harder for him to say the thing he had sworn to himself he would tell them. "Look," he said, and everyone fell silent at once. "I don't want to sound like I'm trying to be modest or anything, but I've had a lot of help with all that stuff." "Not with the dragon you didn't," said Michael Corner at once. "That was a seriously cool bit of flying." Yeah, well, said Harry, feeling it would be churlish to disagree. And nobody helped you get rid of those Dementors this summer, said Susan Bones. No, said Harry. Okay, I know I did bits of it without help, but the point is you're trying to make it... Were you trying to weasel out of us showing us any of this stuff, said Zachariah Smith. Here's an idea, said Ron loudly, before Harry could speak. Why don't you shut your mouth? Perhaps the word weasel had affected Ron particularly strongly. In any case, he was now looking at Zacharias as though he would like nothing better than to thump him. Zacharias flushed. Well, we've all turned up to learn from him, and now he's telling us that he can't really do any of it, he said. That's not what he said, snarled Fred Weasley. Would you like us to clean out your ears for you, inquired George, pulling out a long and lethal-looking metal instrument from inside one of the Zonko bags. Or any part of your body, really. We're not fussy when we stick this. Said Fred. Well, said Hermione hastily, moving on. The point is, are we agreed we want to take lessons from Harry? There was a murmur of general agreement. Zacharias folded his arms and said nothing. Perhaps this was because he was too busy keeping an eye on the instrument in George's hand. Right, said Hermione, looking relieved that something had at last been settled. Well, the next question is, how often do we want to do this? I don't think there's any point of meeting less than once a week. Hang on, said Angelina. We need to make sure this doesn't work. It doesn't clash with our Quidditch practice. No, said Cho, not with ours. Nor ours, said Zacharias Smith. I'm sure we can find a night that suits everyone, Hermione said impatiently. But you know, this is rather important. We're talking about learning to defend ourselves against Voldemort's Death Eaters. Well said, barked Ernie McMillan, whom Harry had been excited to speak with long before this. Expecting to speak long before this. Personally, I think this is really important, possibly more important than anything else we'll do this year, even with our owls coming up. He looked around impressively, as though waiting for people to cry, surely not. When nobody spoke, he went on, I, personally, am at a loss to see why the Ministry has foisted such a useless teacher upon us at this critical period. Obviously, they are in denial about the return of you-know-who, but to give us a teacher who is trying to actively prevent us from using defensive spells. I think the reason Umbridge doesn't want us trained in defense against the dark arts, said Hermione, is that she's got some kind of mad idea that Dumbledore could use the students in the school as some kind of private army. She thinks he'd mobilize us against the Ministry. Nearly everyone looked around stunned at this news, everybody except Luna Lovegood, who piped up. But that makes sense. After all, Cornelius Fudge has got his own private army. What? Said Harry, completely thrown off by this unexpected piece of information. Yes, he's got an army of heliopaths, said Luna solemnly. No, he hasn't, snapped Hermione. Yes, he has, said Luna. Hold on a second, my phone seems to be ringing. No, he hasn't, snapped Hermione. Yes, he has, said Luna. What are heliopaths? Asked Neville, looking blank. They're spirits of fire, said Luna, her protuberant eyes wandering so that she looked madder than ever. Great, tall, flaming creatures that gallop across the ground, burning everything in front of them. They don't exist, Neville, said Hermione tartly. Oh, yes, they do, said Luna angrily. I'm sorry, but where's the proof of that? Snapped Hermione. There are plenty of eyewitness accounts. Just because you're so narrow-minded, you need to have everything shoved under your nose before you. Ahem, said Ginny, in a good imitation of Professor Umbridge, that several people looked around in alarm and then laughed. Weren't we trying to decide how often we're going to meet and get defense lessons? Yes, said Hermione at once. Yes, we were. You're right. Well, once a week sounds cool, said Lee Jordan. As long as... began Angelina. Yes, yes, we know about Quidditch, said Hermione, a tense voice. The other thing is to decide where we're going to meet. This was rather more difficult. The whole group fell silent. Library, suggested Katie Bell after a few moments. I can't see Madame Pince being too chuffed about us doing jinxes in the library, said Harry. Maybe an unused classroom, said Dean. Yeah, said Ron. McGonagall might let us have hers. She did when Harry was practicing for the Triwizard. But Harry was pretty certain that McGonagall would not be so accommodating this time. For all that Hermione had said about study and homework groups being loud, he had a distinct feeling this one might be considered a lot more rebellious. Right, well, we'll try to find somewhere, said Hermione. We'll send a message round to everyone when we've got a time and place for the first meeting. She rummaged in her bag and produced parchment and a quill, and then hesitated, rather as though she was steeling herself to say something. I think everyone should write their name down, just as so we know who was here, but I also think, she took a deep breath, that we ought to agree not to shout about what we're doing. So if you sign, you're agreeing not to tell Umbridge or anyone else what we're up to. Fred reached out for the parchment and cheerfully put it down his signature, but Harry noticed at once that several people looked less than happy at the prospect of putting their names on the list. Said Zacharias slowly, not taking the parchment that George was trying to pass him. Well, I'm sure Ernie will tell me when the meeting is. But Ernie was looking rather hesitant about signing, too. Hermione raised her eyebrows at him. Well, we are prefects, Ernie burst out, and if this list was found, I mean to say, you said yourself, if Umbridge finds out. You just said this group was the most important thing you'd do this year, Harry reminded him. I guess, said Ernie, I do believe that, it's just... Ernie, do you really think I'd leave this list lying around, said Hermione testily. No, no, of course not, said Ernie, looking slightly less anxious. Yes, yes, of course I'll sign it. Nobody raised objections after Ernie, though Harry saw Cho's friend give a rather reproachful look before adding her name. When the last person, Zacharias, had signed, Hermione took the parchment and zipped it carefully in her bag. There was an odd feeling in the group now. It was as though they had just signed some kind of contract. Well, time's ticking, said Fred briskly, getting to his feet. George Lee and I have got a list of sensitive items to purchase. We'll be seeing you all later. In twos and threes, the rest of the group took their leave, too. Cho made a rather business of fastening the catch on her bag before leaving, her long, dark curtain of hair swinging forward to hide her face. But her friend stood beside her, arms folded, clicking her tongue, so that Cho had little choice but to leave with her. As her friend ushered her through the door, Cho looked back and waved at Harry. "Well, I think that went quite well," said Hermione happily, as she, Ron, and Harry walked out of the Hogshead, turned into the bright light. A few moments later, still Harry and Ron clutching their bottles of butterbeer. "That Zacharias bloke's a wart," said Ron, who was glowering after the figure of Smith, just discernible in the distance. "I don't like him much either," admitted Hermione, "but he overheard me talking to Ernie and Hannah at the Hufflepuff table, and he seemed really interested in coming, so what could I say? But the more people, the better. I mean, Michael Corner and his friends wouldn't have come if he hadn't been going out with Ginny." Ron, who had been draining the last few drops of butterbeer, gagged and sprayed butterbeer down his front. "He what?" said Ron, outraged, his ears now resembling curls of raw beef. "She's going out with... My sister's going... What do you mean, Michael Corner?" "Well, that's what why he and his friends came. I think, well, they're obviously interested in learning defense, but if Ginny hadn't told Michael what was going on..." When did she... "They met at the Yule Ball, and they got together at the end of last year," said Hermione composedly. They had turned into the high street, and she paused outside Scriffshaft's quill shop, where there was a handsome display of pheasant feather quills in the window. "I could do with a new quill." She turned into the shop. Harry and Ron followed her. "Which one was Michael Corner?" Ron demanded furiously. "The dark one," said Hermione. "I don't like him," said Ron at once. "Big surprise," said Hermione under her breath. "But..." Ron said, following Hermione, along a row of quills and copper pots. "I thought Ginny fancied Harry." Hermione looked at him rather piteously and shook her head. "Ginny used to fancy Harry, but she gave up on him months ago. Not that she doesn't like you, of course," she added kindly to Harry, when she examined a long black and gold quill. Harry, whose head was full of Cho's parting wave, did not find the subject quite as interesting as Ron, who was positively quivering with indignation. But it did bring something home to him that until then he had not just really registered. "So that's why she talks to me now?" he asked Hermione. "She never used to talk in front of me." "Exactly," said Hermione. "Yes, I think I'll have this one." She went up to the counter and handed over 15 sickles and 2 newts. Ron was still breathing down her neck. "Ron," she said severely, and as she turned and trod on his feet, "this is exactly why Ginny hasn't told you but she's seeing Michael. She knew you'd take it badly. So don't harp on it, for heaven's sake." "What do you mean, who's taking anything badly? I'm not going to harp on anything." Ron continued to chunter under his breath, all the way down the street. Hermione rolled her eyes at Harry, and then said in an undertone, while Ron was muttering imprecations about Michael Corner. And talking about Michael and Ginny, what about Cho and you? What do you mean, said Harry quickly. It was as though boiling water was rising rapidly inside him, a burning sensation that was causing his face to smart in the cold. Had he been that obvious? Well, said Hermione, smiling slightly, she just couldn't keep her eyes off you, could she? Harry had never appreciated before just how beautiful the village of Hogsmeade was. And that's the end of chapter 16. And does that remind you of any little girls in a linear algebra class looking up at a teacher? Or maybe the teacher staring at them, one of the two. I love you so much, kitten. Sleep well, Boo. Good night.